Is multifamily your favorite? What gets you the most excited? And to be honest, that's a really hard one for me to answer.
This is the South Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your South Storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 18 years has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated nearly 5 million square feet of South Storage nationwide. With the help of his incredible team at SouthStorageInvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in South Storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the South Storage Podcast. I am your host, Scott Myers, and you are in for a special treat today. We have it in the house, none other than Mr. Ben Call. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott. I'm excited to be here today and share a little bit about my story and try to provide some value to some listeners who are interested in self-storage.
Well, we know that that is not going to be a problem following your track record and your background. Speaking of which, I've been following, I've been watching what you're doing out there, doing some cool stuff, scaling up, and we just shared before we get on, you just shared that you're getting ready to purchase a portfolio and making some big life changes here as well. So why don't you get Storage Nation caught up on everything that Ben Call is doing right now in his professional life and how that's leading to some pretty cool things in your personal life?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, a little bit about my story. I used to be a college football coach at Kansas State University. That lifestyle, for everyone who's, you know, not embedded in college sports, it's a pretty grueling career. You're consistently working close to, you know, 80 to 100 hours a week, you know, 24/7 the entire year. And so after getting married, my wife and I essentially realized that that was not the life that we had envisioned. You know, it was a dream that I was living out, you know, as a former college athlete. Being around sports, my wife was an athlete as well. But, you know, as you get married, things change. So we needed to take a life pivot, and we ended up moving back to my hometown of Rochester, Minnesota, and I became a real estate agent. And it, originally, it was going to be a holdover job until I found something in sports again. But kind of being a competitive athlete, that nature came out in me, and I hit the ground running as a real estate agent, saying yes to every opportunity that I had. And so, you know, fast forward a year after becoming licensed, I was selling houses, I was listing houses, I was doing commercial leasing, commercial sales. I had started a property management company. And so now, fast forward 2 years, I have a property management company and a brokerage business that is going fairly well. And I started working with investors to sell single family houses. So now I'm selling people houses, I'm managing their rentals. And over time, I start to build a little track record. So that portion of my company was growing. And in 2018, one of the owners of the largest portfolio that I had managed in my property management division of my company called me and said, Ben, you've made me a lot of the money over the last couple of years, and I just got presented a bigger opportunity than I can do on my own. And you are an operator that does a fantastic job. It's a self-storage deal that I know absolutely nothing about, and I'm aware you don't do storage, but I have confidence in you. Would you partner on it with me? If it's something you're interested, we should do it. The numbers look great. And not investing in anything yet, or even thinking that I was going to become an investor, I basically, you know, looked at my wife and said, hey, we've been starting to listen to podcasts a little bit. I've been reading some books. It seems like, you know, the whole rich dad, poor dad, Robert Kiyosaki is, hey, that might be a good idea for the rest of our life to not have all our eggs in a basket and be a commission-based agent. So I just said, yeah, completely blind, you know, and about 30 to 40 days after going under contract on this storage deal that neither myself or my partner knew anything about, we closed. And we were completely blind in it. I brought the hustle. I brought some money to the table. And, you know, the hard part in the industry back when I got started in 2018 is there weren't podcasts like this. You know, there weren't many books written about self-storage. So the only thing I was able to do was drive around to some of the other facilities in my market and ask for advice. And back then, the old school approach is not to give advice, to hide all of your information and not share, you know, quote unquote, trade secrets. And so what I did is I leaned on to some buddies who owned and operated hotels, and I decided I should operate a storage facility just like a hotel. So a lot of that was bringing my rentals online, and I had this whole concept of bringing a concierge service to self-storage. You know, so now knowing and listening to everything else in the industry and having, you know, about 400,000 square feet or close to 3,000 units, this is nothing new. It's not rocket science. It's something that's been going on. But at the time, I was doing anything to provide customer superior service to customers. And that was my first inkling of it. And eventually, you know, after a couple quarters, we started paying distributions. You know, and I was getting cash flow for myself as a real life investor. And so after doing my very first investment ever and being a larger commercial property in a self-storage niche, I was hooked. And so that was in 2018. Fast forward today, which is 2023, the bulk of my portfolio is self-storage. But the other 50% is split between multifamily and triple net real estate across the Midwest. I still have a third-party management division. I still have a brokerage team at RE/MAX Results. And the newer company that I founded in the last couple of years is called Legacy Investment Group. And essentially, this started just because of word of mouth and people in my local market watching me and continuing to ask to invest with me. So the Legacy Investment Group is essentially a private equity or syndication company where we bring in silent partners to help raise capital to go buy some bigger deals. And so as you alluded to in the intro, the biggest deal to date was an $18 million storage portfolio in northern Minnesota. And we've closed on that, and we've been implementing our transition onto all of our systems, our locks, our gates, our software. For the last 2 months, and transitioning something of that size is definitely a whirlwind. Even though that I thought we had all of our, you know, team and systems in place, there's always something new to learn or implement in every situation that you get yourself into as an investor.
We come from similar backgrounds in terms of you know, coming into self-storage, you know, a little bit afterwards, after being involved in a multifamily and a single family, you know, their asset classes. And, you know, I came into it the same way that you did, which is there wasn't a whole lot out there. There wasn't, you know, many people teaching it. I didn't know a whole lot about it. So I was asking the people that were in it. And fortunately, you know, this industry, we find that people are willing to share, you know, they're willing to share a lot of information about the industry themselves without, you know, divulging their competitive advantage. And that was the difference between single family and multifamily. But aside from that, you know, that's why we started our education company, and that's why we started our podcast, because we recognized there was a hole in the marketplace where there wasn't a lot of information out there. And trade shows are great, and the associations are good. But that's really, you know, there's only so much you can learn about the building side of it and the operations side of it still. But, you know, the nuts and bolts of investing, you know, that's a whole different ball of wax. It's a whole different skill set that is involved on that end as well. So I'm glad that you went in and the numbers did look great, and you discerned enough, you and your partner, that it was great, because many times when people do that without getting educated, sometimes it doesn't turn out very well. But a couple of things that I wanted to tack on to. So, you know, Legacy is how I came to find you. But then knowing that you're involved in other asset classes, and some of those are by way of what you were managing in the past, but you're still into triple net commercial, you're looking at multifamily and also in self-storage. And so, you know, here we are, we're heading into what would some would say either we're in it or heading into another economic cycle. So you've got three asset classes that you're investing in and managing for. You know, how are you approaching the market with those three? Are you shifting away from one or two versus another one, or doubling down in two versus three? You know, tell me of the three asset classes that you're in right now, you know, how are you positioning for the future and for 2024?
You know, that's something that I get asked a lot about. You know, if I'm talking to an investor about a particular deal, you know, that we're working on, they say, oh, is storage your favorite? Is multifamily your favorite? What gets you the most excited? And to be honest, that's a really hard one for me to answer. You know, I was a property manager first. You know, I was negotiating with Chipotle corporate before I ever owned anything in self-storage or multifamily. You know, so I've had a lot of experience as an operator and property manager in all three asset types. So to be completely honest, I feel very comfortable in each of them. As an investor, you know, putting my investor hat on, I've been in self-storage and multifamily the longest. Triple net was something that I saw about 2 years ago where there was an opportunity in the space. During COVID, there was a lot of scare amongst a lot of investors in retail. And I'd been managing it for quite a while, so I knew a lot of the, you know, the specific things to look at from a location, a traffic count, a speed limit, you know, a lot of those checklist items corporate tenants are looking at. And I saw a major drought in construction of retail. And so I knew that there were certain service-based businesses where a human actually has to go to get physical therapy, their nails done, haircuts, chiropractic space, you know, even some plumbing companies that have supplies, right? So I saw a massive supply problem in very good located retail. And I saw a lot of investors backing out. I saw a lot of sellers leaving the space. And so I saw opportunity to try to go pick up some retail centers at an 8-cap valuation at the time where self-storage and multifamily was trading at a 6-cap. You know, so from a pure return perspective, simple math says your returns are going to be significantly better. Now, today, I have learned that you need to be extremely cautious in the roller coaster of, you know, high valuations and cash flows to cratering overnight with tenants leaving in triple net. It's a lot different than self-storage. And in the triple net space, you can have one tenant leave, opposed to in self-storage, you can have 100 tenants leave to get the same magnitude of valuation shifts. So you just need to pay attention to things much differently. But if you have a well-positioned and located retail center, you can do very, very well today. And I still believe that.
And I would agree. And that is, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, we got into self-storage versus, you know, it was a natural progression, a natural shift for us to go from multifamily because, yes, you do have multiple units and you spread your risk and your cash flow and you don't have the wild swings when you have multiple versus a triple net. You know, if you have only one tenant and you lose one tenant, you have 100% of your income goes away. And if you lose one tenant in your storage facility, you've got one 400th or one 250th, you know, no matter how many units you have, it's a fraction and it doesn't kill you at the end of the day. However, well-positioned, doing your due diligence and homework and flexing your risk muscle a little bit, which you've been in the business, you've been in the industry for a little while, you understand more of what it looks like. You know, those are the times and those are the people like yourselves that take those, look at those opportunities, not as a risk, but as a as an opportunity to jump in when the market is where it is. And so, you know, you mentioned the word scare. So I'm going to let's dive into fear a little bit as an investor. And, you know, we can talk about this at a couple different levels. I mean, it's wise. You have to have a certain amount of fear, especially when you're raising capital and investing on other folks' behalf. You can't just go and be, you know, with a whole lot of bravado and invest like you would if it were just your own money and be more of a risk taker. In that sense, you have to be mindful of the market. There is a healthy fear that's involved in that. But also, you know, when everybody else is getting scared and they're rushing out is when, you know, investors should be rushing in, the smart investors who are doing it properly and doing their due diligence and market analysis. You know, at least that's what Warren Buffett and just about every other very successful investor will tell you. You know, that is the time. These are the times in which you create wealth as an investor. So I find that athletes at a high level, military personnel, folks tend to not get scared, not get anxious, or they don't let that fear, many times unfounded, stop them from investing. So, you know, we could break it down, but just, you know, what are your initial thoughts on, you know, a healthy fear or fear in the economy or in the market and how you invest?
It's a major discussion point right now amongst our team and the investors that we've been working with for a few years. And, you know, to kind of go back to your question about asset classes, you know, one of the reasons I really like being diversified in multiple asset classes is because, you know, what I touched on at the beginning, you know, a lot of my original mentors just in real estate were hotel owners and managers. They have been absolutely crushed over the last 3 or 4 years. Like, they're still digging their way out of that hole. You know, and so for me, my perspective and one of the things I talk about with the investors that work with us, you know, and in my personal profile is like, look, we really love having, you know, the stability of self-storage and multifamily but we're finding a unique value add or, you know, little chip over here in the retail space. You know, so it helps spread out some of that risk or fear of investing heavily just in one asset class. You know, so that's part of the discussion that we have with our investors. You know, but the other part is the way that we've built our company on working with investors particularly is because of the track record that I built as a property manager and doing things on my own for multiple years before I got started. And so to be honest, the largest fear I've had as an investor is managing other people's money, you know, because everyone's at a different place in their life. You know, some people are looking to invest in a real estate to help pay for their kids' college. Others are investing in a real estate to leave their corporate job or their W-2. Others are looking to invest to fund their retirement. And so I have to put this hat on to manage their money. And if I screw it up, I could ruin years of people's lives. And so that's the biggest fear mindset that I've had to overcome over the last few years. And, you know, one of the most impactful things that I did is I joined a couple different masterminds and I hired a performance or a mindset coach a few years ago. And limiting beliefs that I had or fears that I had in my business or my personal life, it's been immensely helpful for me to grow personally and also in my business. And it's also been very helpful because when I'm talking, you know, about the current economy, you know, today interest rates have come down a little bit, but at the end of the day, if I go bring out a deal right now and go get term sheets with bank, interest rates are going to be at about 8% for the most part. You might be able to find some better terms, but it's really hard to make deals work when your interest rate's 8% and the cap rate's trading at an in-place 6 cap. The inversion just does not make sense, you know, from a simple math perspective. So to figure out how to underwrite it properly, because not many banks are lending on a pro forma basis right now, it's difficult, you know, and to explain to an investor that, oh, the bank isn't lending on pro forma, it's not making money right now, but you need to trust our track record and our history in this asset class, you know, to turn it around over the next couple of years, then also look at our crystal ball and say interest rates, you know, theoretically should come down and this is the highest they're going to be. It's created a lot of really difficult discussions I don't think many of us have been a part of over the last few years as investors.
Agreed. And that is a discussion that we're having now as well. And we don't know exactly, as you mentioned, where the market's heading in terms of interest rates. You know, this will be my third recession. And so, you know, we can see a little further down the road. We've been through this before. And yes, we feel that interest rates are going to come back down here. Nothing changes in our model in terms of the way that we underwrite a deal. It's just our cost of capital has to be coming in at a higher amount. And so, you know, if interest rates are at 8 and we're not being able to buy at a 10 or get to a 10 cap, you know, on underwriting, we're going to perform up very, very soon, then it's probably something that we're not interested in. And it would be very difficult, again, to then persuade, not convince or tell our investors, you know, that, hey, trust us, but, you know, this is what we're, you know, this is where we're going to take it. It has to be a compelling story. It has to be believable. And we have to be able to prove that out. So right now, the biggest challenge that we have in talking with our investors is, well, what are you going to do with your money right now in inflation where it is? You know, if you're sitting on the sidelines and you're in cash, you're losing money right now. You need to get your money in play. And so for, you know, the rates, at least that we're offering to our investors, you know, far exceeds the inflation rate. And so even if we miss our mark by a point or two, they're still going to be further ahead than if they were sitting in cash or investing in some of these, you know, the other, I guess, alternative investments or other investments, period, that aren't even keeping up with inflation. But that's always a challenge as syndicators. You know, we are, you know, I think all of us, Storage Nation, depending upon where you're at in your investment life cycle and in storage, you begin investing with your own money until you run out. And then you manage on your own until you can't. And then we go third party. And then you recognize that you also can't do that any longer because you're responsible for your investors' returns. And now you need to bring it back in-house like you've done from the beginning, Ben, to be able to handle, you know, and to be able to manage that expense. And now you graduate to the place where you're not just an investment company anymore. Now you're a financial services company and you deploy capital on behalf of others. And that is for their retirement accounts, that is for the college, or that is to bring a spouse or somebody in the household home. And that takes on a whole different life on its own, as you mentioned. And so, you know, Tell us what this looks like heading into then, you know, into 2024. Now, the asset classes that you have, understanding where you're at in terms of the investment company, you know, what's the next in terms of scale, or are you looking to stay the same size as you are right now, pull back? You know, what's on the horizon for you, Ben?
Yeah, you know, the thing that I would add there is, you know, having discussions with investors that I've worked with, you know, originally it starts as friends and family, and then you do a deal, you start paying distributions as promised, and you start to get referrals. And so that's grown over the last couple of years. But right now, based off what we're seeing, you know, we have various goals and targets we're trying to hit each year from an acquisition, from a return perspective, from a distributions. You know, but right now we've closed one deal in the calendar year of 2023. You know, our goal was to close $25 million worth of real estate. We closed 18. You know, and being at the beginning of November right now, we don't anticipate we're going to close anything else this year. You know, but that was not for a lack of trying. You know, from an acquisition standpoint, you know, to do the one deal we did this year, we've submitted over 53 LOIs. And one under contract on six, and only one got to the closing table. So it's just a difficult economy. And I think one of the biggest things that we've had to really pay attention to is discipline, discipline in what we're going after, and discipline not to make a spreadsheet look good, and understanding and using our experience in the multiple assets that we're in to ensure that we're going to be able to produce the returns that we would expect personally and selfishly if we're doing it by ourselves, but also for the investors that are coming with us. You know, so as we go into, you know, 2024, you know, we would love to hit the same metrics that I just, you know, explained. But at the same time, I think there's probably going to be some other opportunity if we are patient and if we can position ourselves to have some cash or access to cash through investors that have told us they're going to be waiting and some of the lending relationships that we have. We think there's going to be some unique opportunity, and we're already having some brokers, you know, call us about some things that they're working on bringing out in the pipeline of Q1. So I am optimistically excited about 2024, and strategically in each of the asset classes that we've talked about. But one of the things that I've, you know, realized as my storage portfolio specifically has grown is, and one of the reasons why I like it so much is because there's such a multitude of small levers you can play with during operations to create massive valuation swings, but also cash flow. And, you know, even if you, yeah, I'm kind of talking on experience right now, but the deal we just closed is we thought we were overly prepared for this transition. In the last 2 months, if I had to rate the transition, I would say it was nowhere near to the level that we would expect a transition to happen. Partially that is because of some third-party vendors and software companies. Part of it is because a couple things we did not pay attention to in a specific market. But overall, the thing that I've learned in being in the industry for quite a while is if we lose ground over a couple months or a couple quarters, there are little levers you can pull to make up ground very, very quickly. And that's one of the reasons why I love storage so much.
I would agree. And we've bought a handful of portfolios. It's not really a big part of what we do. Certainly, if we can take it down and it makes sense, we would do so. But most of them are individual properties like yourself, Ben. And you know, we're approaching now over 4.5 million square feet, you know, over the several years that I've been investing in self-storage, and from individual properties to portfolios. No matter how much you due diligence you do, no matter how long you've been doing this, there's some transitions that go exactly as you had anticipated and planned. There's some that fall short of the mark just because of some things that I can't even say in your instance, like that we didn't pay attention to the market. We just didn't even see them. They weren't even on our radar. And we know we've been at this for a little while. And then there's others that go even better than we had anticipated because there's some things we found in the market or in the facility, you know, some more horsepower that was left that we didn't even know about. So I don't think that'll ever change. I don't think that we're always going to have it 100% dialed in. But again, the beauty of self-storage, as you just mentioned, you know, there's so many different ancillary profit centers that we can add. There's so many other ways to look at rate and revenue management and adding additional square footage, you know, because they're small units. You know, you buy a Dollar General, you're not going to put another Dollar General on the same piece of ground after you buy it. And But in self-storage, you know, hey, there's some place over here where the turn is a little too large, and there's another half acre that, you know, that we can put some additional units on, and you can squeeze more revenue out of these properties than anticipated in the beginning. And so, again, another one of the many beauties of self-storage is that it's very flexible, and there's so much that we can do with it. So, Ben, you'd also mentioned the power of masterminds and mindset coaching, and that's, you know, at the Self-Storage Mastermind that we've been running for a number of years now, we combine that. Same thing. I've had a coach. I don't think anybody who shies away from a coach or looks at you and I, no matter how long you've been in the business or I've been in the business, and thinks, wow, why should I follow or listen to or get a coach when I've been investing this long? You know, what would you say to that?
I would say it's complete bullshit. You know, that's very blunt, but that's kind of who I am. You know, I'm an athlete, right? I got to play Division I football. I always had coaches, and I loved coaching because I loved being around people who motivated me and pushed me to become a better athlete. And so, you know, this was, again, before I started reading and listening to podcasts, but at the end of the day, joining a mastermind or getting a coach, you know, and you hear it a lot now on podcasts, but surrounding yourself with the people that you want to be or become, you know. And so ultimately, I love putting myself in rooms where I'm the smallest fish in the pond, you know. So a couple of weeks ago, I was in Atlanta at a mastermind, and, you know, we're sitting at a table sharing, you know, some of our goals, both personally and financially. And from a financial standpoint, you know, I was kind of in the room, and, you know, over the last couple of years, my net worth has grown pretty substantially. But then you sit down at a table and you like kind of get into this little turtle shell and you're like, oh man, this is like the perfect room for me. Whereas a few years ago, I would have been horribly intimidated and really shy and quiet. But I saw this as an opportunity to really learn and pay attention to the people that I'm surrounding myself with now. So, you know, the point of masterminds and coaching is to be around the people that you want to become. If that's just in your personal life, if it's travel, if it's business, if it's things that you want to accomplish in the next 5 to 10 years, you just need to surround yourself with those people because they rub off on you.
Yeah, as Jim Rohn said, just to say it another way, you are the sum total of the five people that you spend the most amount of time with. And those are the people that should be at the very same level with high aspirations, or they should be above you. And that is what I find. And I have no problem being not the smartest person in the room, because there's no growth that happens as a result of that. Certainly you can contribute, and we're all meant to contribute as we get on in years and share our experiences as well. You know, and I hope to be one of those five people to other folks as well, to be able to help them along. But if those of us that are very successful and entrepreneurial minded, we tend to also look to ourselves and say that we are a self-made man or a self-made woman. And I would also say to that, there's no such thing. And you need to surround yourself with good people, because they'll uncover your blind spots. And if you're not looking for accountability and it's not a part of a mastermind or a group that you're involved in, then I would say that there may not be growth unless you're just completely the unicorn out there. You need that accountability, and you need to surround yourselves. That's why I built my mastermind, is because I wanted to get a group of folks in self-storage that were like-minded individuals that are striving for something greater. We can share best business practices, and again, in an industry in which many people do so, and then also have the opportunity to do business together, because you can't find that anywhere else. But if you build it and you put those people in the room, or if you're a part of that, then all of a sudden that collective intelligence, you know, there's just something magical that happens as a result of that.
And I would just add to that and say that, you know, a lot of people look at real estate investors or real estate investors, a lot of people look at real estate investors or developers in a sense that all of them are wealthy, all of them are greedy, and all of them are money hungry. I would say all the investors and developers that I know are doing it for a lifestyle. They're looking to do it for financial freedom, to be able to travel, to spend more time with their kids, to live on their own schedule, to not be on the clock at their corporate job moving their mouse, to not get fired. You know, so it's a totally different perspective. And as I've grown in this, and as my friends have become business partners and become investors with me, they're doing it because they want the lifestyle that my wife and I have been able to build over the last few years. You know, we got to travel last year for 5 years outside of the country. Not many people have the ability to do that. And a lot of hard work went into being able to accomplish that. But again, it's surrounding yourself with the people you want to be and putting yourself in opportunities through networking to put yourself into those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%. the groups that I'm in, and there are some wealthy individuals as well. You know, these folks, they have achieved a level of success. But as you mentioned, Ben, it wasn't to compare notes. It wasn't to keep score. It wasn't to prove anything to anyone. It wasn't to buy a Lamborghini and to at an island to crush it and, you know, show off to the girlfriend in high school that dumped them. It was because they wanted freedom. You know, they wanted freedom to do what they want to do whenever they want to do it and not have to answer to anybody else and not have to say no or go without. And that's really what it's about. And you're right. It's a heavy lift to get to that place, but it's worth it once you get there. So Ben, you shared that you lean into coaching, you lean into education, you want to surround yourself. You are a guy that is no stranger to growth and being accountable. So tell me what you're reading right now. What is maybe your top read or your top three reads right now that you would recommend to Storage Nation?
Yeah. So, you know, over the last few years, we've grown pretty rapidly. And my big focus in 2023 was systems, you know, really, really dialing in everything from our actual management and storage softwares to, you know, all of the project management for each of our properties to just communication amongst our team. So we spent a lot of time really figuring out what systems we needed to implement so that as we continue to grow at the pace that we are, no balls are getting dropped and we're able to operate and manage our properties just like I did when it was my very first one. And, you know, a lot of, call it my pitch to investors, is that we are typically able to produce the returns that we do because of our operational efficiencies. And recently, a lot of the deals that we've acquired, you know, we just closed an $18 million deal that had six offers on it. You know, why were we able to separate ourselves and win? Were we the suckers that paid too much? Or were we able to underwrite it because we saw the little levers that we could pull in portfolio and confidently close it and implement those? So a lot of that was done because of the systems that we've been able to build this year. So a lot of what I'm reading right now, the specific book that I'm reading right now is Who Not How. It's been a very impactful book. And part of the reason that I touched on before we started recording is, you know, we're going to Colorado for a month, just my wife and I, to kind of get away. And part of that is I'm going to be challenging myself. And this is something my coach told me yesterday in one of our coaching calls, is he said, Ben, no matter what is happening at any of your properties or back home, if your house is on fire, do not go home. And that was like one of those like gulp moments that said, well, get the hell out of here. I'm flying home. My house is on fire. And it was a challenge to me to really implement the systems that I'm putting in place and are relying on my team to continue to move things forward. And so that's where a lot of my attention has been. And I would say, fortunately, looking back on it, this was a slower year from an acquisition standpoint. And it probably couldn't have came at a better time selfishly because we've been growing at such a rapid pace.
Yeah, anything by Dan Sullivan. I was a member of a strategic coach for a number of years. Is just gold. And you know, Who Not How is another one that you absolutely need to add to your list if you haven't read it already. Storage Nation, and also kind of going back a few years, Michael Gerber in the E Myth. You know, he talked about setting up a franchise for your business, and self storage is one of those industries and those businesses that is pretty. It's a simple, predictable business model that you can really, you know, kind of pare down and parse down into different processes. And so we've been able to do that in our business as well. And we're not 100% there, but there's not a whole lot that slips through the cracks. And now, you know, once we hit the go button on an acquisition and then a transition, you know, there's a detailed checklist, and we have individuals that know exactly what to do and how to go about doing it. And so that absolutely is again something else that sets you apart when you're raising capital and bringing on partners to show that you have thought about this and that there's a process behind it. And, you know, we've got some tools that we've used along the way to help us. But I'm curious, Ben, you know, as you've gone through and set up your processes, you don't have to open up your entire toolbox, but what has been essential from, say, project management tools to, you know, communications or even to the site-specific, you know, the self-storage-specific level? You know, what types of tools have been just, you know, integral to making sure that you're operating in all cylinders?
Yeah. So specifically in storage, the software that we use across our portfolio is StorEdge. You know, dependent upon the facility and if it's gated or has fencing, We also use DaVinci locks at a lot of our facilities to kind of help with some of the remote management and not having to have an on-site manager to kind of help trim it. So StorEdge and DaVinci locks are two things that we've been using for quite a while. From a project management standpoint, we use a software called Asana. There's a comparable product called Monday, which is pretty popular, well, but we really liked some of the integrations and just some of the workflows amongst our team for Asana. And then from a communication standpoint, you know, a lot of what we had been doing originally was just text and email. As busy people who are on the go in their vehicle a lot, you can open up a text message and not respond and it gets lost. You can open up and read an email and not respond because you're sitting in a stoplight. So communication was really important. So a lot of our communication amongst the team that we work with, everything from VAs to our accountants to our bookkeepers to, you know, people who are boots on the ground for us, we use a Slack channel. We can itemize everything by property and location. That was a huge part in ensuring that things are getting done in a timely fashion. One of the fun processes that we did early this year is my wife is a project manager, and she kind of was sitting in some of our meetings with me and my business partner, Jonah, of how do we want to add all of these different things and what are the things that they do. She works at the Mayo Clinic, which is, you know, the number one largest hospital in the world. And so it was fun having her sit in and get to see, you know, what she does on a daily basis and kind of help implement it into what we do. And so we sat in a very large conference room with multiple different colors of sticky notes. And just the process that we went through was, okay, from the time an LOI gets accepted until you close, and then the first month after transition, what is literally everything that happened? And we color-coded everything from LOI to purchase agreement, from purchase agreement to the end of due diligence, from the end of due diligence to the close date, and then the first month of transition. So everything was color-coded. And then we put them, you know, in a tiered order of how they need to get done. And so that was eye-opening, you know, everything from the very, very obvious to the most minute thing of just like setting up insurance on auto pay, you know, every little thing that could possibly get added. And this took multiple sessions because there's so many things that you just do that you might not think about. And so that was a really, really fun exercise. But then the ability to build that into Asana when we go under contract on a property, and then we're able to add workflows, you know. So a lot of what I do is on the operational side, and, you know, the working with the tenants. And my business partner, Jonah, is a lot of the legal and working on, you know, the lending side. And so, you know, a lot of the things that get done, how do we do them where I need to have sign off in my area of expertise? And then as soon as I check that off, it flows over to him so he can finish up and wrap them off. So there's a lot of that that we've been able to implement that I would say it feels like we're now running as a corporate business opposed to just like a solo entrepreneur, is a lot of the, you know, the book talking about right now.
We love Asana around here as well. That there's the property side and then there's the team side. And, you know, we've used Microsoft Teams, and that is how we have communicated. Slack, we tried to implement and didn't work out quite well for us. Either way, we also tried to, you know, to have one platform for both, and it just doesn't work. I think Asana is just a killer app for the project management side, and then the communication side. We want to have something that everybody's going to adopt, and I think that's important no matter what you choose. So, very good, Ben. So, Ben, what would you say is probably the best piece of advice that somebody's ever given you?
Just do it. I was an athlete, I was always a big fan of the Nike clothing, cleats, sports gear. And, you know, that's just something that's jumped out at me, you know, getting into, being an entrepreneur to investing, is I see so many people, it goes into, you know, part of the conversation we had earlier in the episode of a lot of people are sitting on the sidelines. A lot of people have been sitting on the sidelines since the beginning of this run back in 2015-16. You know, they've just been stockpiling cash waiting for a crash. And it's sitting here, and I started investing in 2018, and I look at what I've been able to do because of the discipline I've taken and just the just do it attitude. You know, so I would say listen to podcasts like this, read books on what you have interest in, and you're not going to know what your niche or your one thing is going to be the very first time you do it. And the first one might be a little bumpy. But if you learn something from it and you gain confidence to do it over and over and over and turn it into a business like we just talked about, I think that's the thing you really got to pay attention to. You know, so the analysis paralysis is something that I think too many people get scared of. You know, for me, my very first deal was a $1.5 million storage deal. You know, I lived in a $170,000 house that we had just bought, and my first investment was, in theory, a huge one. And I'm so excited that we just did it and relied on the relationship and partnership that we had. And it gave us an immense amount of confidence to be able to build what we have today.
And that goes for these times as well. I mean, if you're digging in and doing the things that you just mentioned, Ben, and that is, you know, understanding what you're investing in, learning it, and then going out and doing it, you're doing it during in a time right now where the cost of capital is high, where there's a lot of risk. But I would say also probably more opportunity because there are fewer people looking to do it because they are sitting on the sidelines. So if you got a solid business model right now and you've got the buffers built into it and profitability that you can plot a path to, now is 100% the time to invest because there's no guarantee that your business is going to be bulletproof. But if you build it during this time, it is certainly going to be battleproof when you head into better times. So very good advice, Ben. Well, Ben, it has been an honor to share you and your story with Storage Nation. If people wanted to follow you and find out a little bit more about what you're doing, where would they go find you?
Yeah, I'm not overly active on social media, but if you want to follow me on LinkedIn, you can find me at Ben_call. So Ben_KALL. You can find us and kind of see what we're up to from a property standpoint at legacyinvestmentgroup.com.
Fantastic. Ben, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate it so much. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Scott.
Hey, gang. Wait, three things before you leave. First, don't forget to follow the South Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram. And don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit follow on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us.